This episode is brought to you in part by Wholehearted Love, a new book by Caleb and Stephanie Rouse. Overcome the barriers that hold you back in your relationships with God and with others, and delight in feeling safe, seen, and loved with Wholehearted Love. For more information, go to Tyndale.com.
You're listening to episode 176,
True Love Waits,
of the In Between podcast, where you'll discover the tools to build a marriage and family that you love. My name is Daniel M.
And I'm Christina M. Do you remember that tagline, Daniel? True Love Waits?
Yep.
I remember wanting that purity ring so badly.
Oh my.
And hinting at ring. It to my parents, but they never got it for me.
Yeah. The number of books that that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And all the books that are starting to flash back that I read as a teenager about purity culture and not kissing until you get married,
right.
How that didn't last for
it's
us.
It's not dating versus courting, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. How long did we last when we started dating?
I don't know if we want to say.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Not too long.
No. Kissing came early for us way before we were engaged. Yes. Okay. But today, bringing to today's topic, we are interviewing the Canadian certified counselor and a friend of ours, Nadine Crane, about navigating the impact of growing up in purity culture now that we're parents who have kids who are teens.
Yeah, tweens and teens.
Yeah, tweens and teens.
Yeah. If you're like us, perhaps you realize there are some good aspects to the purity culture we grew up in, but there's also some really negative side effects to that culture that we don't actually want to pass on to our children. But if we're not going to pass on our past, what do we pass on instead,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, Nadine is going to help us understand and explore the origins and effects of purity culture, highlighting how it is emphasized abstinence and tied a person's worth to their sexual purity. She emphasizes the need to develop a healthier relationship with our bodies and suggests affirmations to reteach and relearn this perspective. We cannot wait to share this episode with you because it has helped us a lot.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we jump in, let me tell you a little bit more about Nadine. Nadine is a Canadian certified counselor with a master's degree in marriage and family therapy. She is a pastor's wife and has served in ministry with her husband, Brandon, for the past 13 years. They live in Edmonton, Alberta, and have three daughters. Her passion is helping Christians connect their mental, emotional, and spiritual health with how they live and experience their bodies. In her counseling practice, Nadine works with couples and individuals who are struggling with anxiety, emotional regulation, recovering from religious trauma, or struggling with sexual intimacy and communication. She also offers premarital counseling and presentations for church groups.
While completing her master's degree, Nadine chose to research how purity culture has impacted the self-esteem, sexuality, and spirituality of evangelical women. You see why we asked her to be on this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Her findings from that project have inspired the trajectory of her counseling practice and ministry. Well, thank you so much, Nadine, for joining us on our In Between podcast. Let's jump in. Well, Nadine, thank you so much for joining us on the In Between podcast. We are so excited to have you here talking about navigating the impact of purity culture on parenthood. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, us too. So our first question is, because we don't want to assume, podcast family, that maybe you're even familiar with the topic. Some of us have maybe grown up in this culture and some of us haven't. So Nadine, if you don't mind, could you describe what purity culture is and what are its origins?
Yes. So with purity culture, purity has obviously been a topic in the church for a long time. But referring to purity culture means more around 1993 time with the True Love Waits movement. That was kind of the big kickstarter of purity culture. And that was in the southern states that started, but it quickly went across the states, North America, and many countries, over 100 countries is where it expanded to. So the True Love Waits campaign was based on kind of fighting against the sex ed that was starting to be more popular in the public schools. So that was a way of trying to reinforce abstinence-only sex education. So that led to books and Bible studies. And, you know, there was just a big kind of wave of this because people responded it so well and churches mm-hmm. all wanted the information, right? It became a big deal. It quickly became one of the most prominent, like, you know, especially for teenagers, for youth groups, it became one of the most prominent things to teach about and books to read, things like that.
Yeah. Why do you think so? Like, why do you think it got so popular?
I think for one, it was presented as this is a way to please God, right? And it being as scripturally sound and this is the way to be a good Christian, right? Mm-hmm. But also mm-hmm. I believe there was a lot of fear around sex in general and pregnancy outside of marriage. That was a statistic that was happening, that mm-hmm. the True Love campaign, that's one of the things they said they were trying to work against, was higher, you know, rates of pregnancy outside of marriage. So there's that fear of sex. And I'm not sure that the, you know, parents or leaders back then were, you know, comfortable, well-equipped to talk about, the messiness and the individualness of each teenager's, you know, way that they learn about and questions they have about sex. So I think that purity culture or the True Love campaign at the beginning was kind of a easy fix, right? Mm-hmm. Which I can understand them grasping onto. It was a way that, like, okay, this will solve the problem, you know.
Yeah. So then when you fast forward the effect of that or the result of that among those who grew up with this teaching, how do you find decades later this has affected Christians and those who grew up with this teaching?
I guess I should give a little bit of the kind of the main, I guess, the teaching. So the main things that purity culture, the messages were really highlighting marriage as the ultimate goal. So it was, you know, as a Christian, marriage is the thing to attain to. And if you stay pure, if you stay sexually pure, you will get a great marriage, a great spouse, have a great sex life. That's, you know, that was the kind of the promises. I don't think that was stated at the beginning, but as it evolved, that became the message around it.
Right.
And then with that, the especially for women, it was quite targeted at female teens, that their worth was tied to their sexual purity. Mm-hmm. So that was a big message, probably one of the more harmful ones that stuck with adult women now. And then of course in general, sex being the enemy, you know, so purity culture, it really presented having sex, or, you know, sex is the enemy. And so what all can we do to stay away from this and to keep ourselves spiritually right with God? Mm-hmm. And so for, women and I'm sure men as well, in marriage and as adults, it's hard to just switch. You can't really just switch your how you feel about that or what you think God maybe thinks about that when it's been taught that way. So that is pretty, and I've read about it. I've known people about this, that it's been quite damaging in marriages, for intimacy. But then also individually for just, you know, our own relationship with our body, and being able to trust, you know, being able to listen to our body, because our body is very connected to the evil thing that, you know, the sex, right? So the way that purity culture may have presented it, or that it was understood at least.
Yeah.
So then that disconnection from our own desires and our body has been a negative impact as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that just even in my own life. Like, I grew up in the True Love Waits sort of era. And I think my parents really caught on to it. I can't really speak for the church, but I think maybe as collectively parents latched onto it because they were afraid of talking about sex. Like they didn't. I, to this day, I cannot remember them talking about what sex actually is. And so they were in one way, I think, thankful that the school would have that discussion. But on the other hand, it wasn't lining up with the Christian values that we had at home. So when this came out and our youth group was all about it, then I remember like books would show up on my desk. No one would say anything. But like the Joshua Harris I Kissed Goodbye would show up on there. I know my dad, I think, bought, I don't even think they had DVDs at the time, like CDs or VHS and would hand it to me, not even hand it, just put it on my desk and it would show up. And so that was kind of the way that they would talk about sex to me through this like distance. Mm-hmm. And I do, Nadine, like you were talking about, I've had many discussions with my friends as Daniel and I got married early and some of them did as well of like, wait, so all of a sudden before like sex was, as you were saying, evil and dirty and you're not supposed to do it, but you put this ring on your finger and then all of a sudden all of these like magical things are supposed to happen and you are supposed to be gifted this wonderful avenue of expressing your love to your spouse. And it didn't always work like that. And there's always different complications and whatnot. And then there was shame of like, what am I doing wrong? Right? Like I followed this purity culture, true love waits to a T, but then why aren't I having the greatest sex that we were promised? And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of backlash against it too, because we don't necessarily want to teach our children that A plus B equals C because maybe it didn't reflect upon us. So Nadine, as our podcast audience knows, our podcast family knows that you're a therapist. And so for those that of us who grew up in purity culture like myself, what would you hope that we would learn about our bodies? And what would you hope that we would learn as we try to maybe navigate away from everything that the True Love Waits purity culture said?
One of the biggest things that I, and especially for my research that I did was, you know, for people to know that shaming sex, it doesn't actually stop, right? Obviously, people continue to have sex, right? It doesn't stop that, mm-hmm. but what it does is it separates our spiritual self and our physical sexual self, like. We do anything we can to try and separate those things when we believe mm-hmm. it's bad. And so, you know, to bringing those back together, there's the three main things that I hope that clients and even listeners here, anyone trying to bring those two back together, right? To have that kind of more holistic health would be to know that that your body is good, you know, mm-hmm. that your body that God created it in his image, that it is good. And that, you know, that includes your sexuality, right? As part of it. Also that your body is holy. So I think that is one of the biggest things that is hard for Christians to put together is, can sex be seen as holy? Like, you know, like, is this a spiritual thing or is it something we just do separately that God says we're allowed to do, you know? And so it's, you know, because I think it really, there's so much we are missing out on when we're not able to see the theological, you know, beautiful things in within sex and marriage. And so knowing that our body and our sexuality is holy. And then the last thing is our body is a friend and not a foe, right? From many avenues, right? We're taught to kind of, it's like we're fighting against our body, right? Whether it be weight loss, whether it be just even sickness and illness. And we set ourselves up. It's like we're against our body. Like, oh, I need to make my body do this. I need, why is this acting up? And instead of, when we view our body as ourselves, right, not something we're against, it's being able to tune in, right, and recognize, oh, my body's a friend. Maybe my body is trying to communicate something to me, right? With the, oh, you know, these pains or these, this anxiety, what is it, you know, what is it my body is trying to say, and how it's, it really is, our bodies are one of our best resources that we have, you know, for health and knowing ourselves. So those would be the three of the main things. Yeah.
Right. Could you talk a little bit more about what it means to like befriend our body, or you're saying be friends with your body? I think not just in purity culture, like you're saying in diet culture, in workout culture, it's like you're beating your body into submission. Like you have control over it, and it definitely seems like we're enemies. And so what does that even look like, or how would we even start to become friends with our body when we can't even look ourselves in the mirror and be like, oh wow, like you look good?
Yeah. I think on the most basic level, and so some people may need this step and some people may not. There is like the recognition, this is my body. So when we kind of set ourselves against our body so much, we tend to look at our body as an object, right? Mm. And that's where we can critique it and criticize it. And we're making comments about our body as if it is not us, ourselves, right? So that part of recognizing and it's simply even repeating to yourself, right, as you look in the mirror or as you sit, you know, like, this is my body, you know, and it sounds silly. A lot of this stuff would feel or sound silly, but it's you're having to kind of reteach yourself, right, and mm-hmm. relearn that, okay, this is like, this is my body, this is my friend, I can trust my body, you know, like to a certain extent, at least enough to listen and see what my body is saying. Mm-hmm. So that would be the first of just acknowledging, recognizing that this is your body and not an object to criticize or separate. And then from there, it's learning how to communicate. So this will sound strange to some, but so if you're, say you're feeling anxious or an emotion is rising up. And you know, for those that are familiar with, you know, trauma and different things of how our body reacts, we know that, you know, sometimes we have responses that are not about the surroundings. So mm-hmm. our body is maybe saying, we're in danger, you know, and you know, we're not actually in danger, you know, something may have just triggered that feeling. And so being aware of that is having the ability to whether you say it in your, you know, out loud or in your head, thank you for, you know, thank you for trying to protect me. But you know, we are safe, or, you know, I'm safe, and, you know, like we can relax and, you know, take some deep breaths, right? It's being aware of there is a communication that's trying to happen between, you know, your nervous system, basically the memories, right, or traumas your body has, and then what is happening in the present. Simple communication to whether just even in your mind being like, you know, I am safe. I thank you for trying to warn me, but, you know, you can relax. And so, that's kind of an example that I think a lot of people could relate to of, you know, certain emotions rising up. Sometimes the emotions would be right. Like, oh, there is something, you know, and when that happens, we just usually react and do it, but how often do we kind of feel like, oh, like I'm so thankful that my body would like responded like it did so that I could, you know, react how I needed to. We talk about thankfulness a lot as Christians, right? And how beneficial that is in so many areas of our life. And that applies here too. But with just being, you know, thankful for specifics about our body, and especially what we're able to do, right, because of our body, not just it looks a certain way, but you know, I can walk around, I can, you know, I can hug my kids. The different things we can do. The awareness of that helps us to realize when we think of ourselves, like when we kind of trick ourselves to think that we can be spiritual without without our bodies, right. It's kind of the reminder of, oh, like I wouldn't be able to worship. I wouldn't be able to read my Bible. All the things, like I actually need my body to be spiritual, you know, like that our body encompasses all of that. So recognizing those things and being thankful is a part of that building back that relationship with your body.
I love that. And I love how you've given us examples. Cause at first, as when you said talk to your body, I was like, what? what are you talking about? I don't understand. Yeah. Can't I just think it? But as you were going through the examples, I could really see how helpful that would be, especially if you've grown up with these other ways of teaching and other ways of thinking and this notion that, yeah, our bodies are evil or our bodies are against and we need to repress or we need to put it away and we need to separate ourselves. So it's interesting. There's always that phrase that people throw around, right? They're like, oh, you're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And it's this whole sense, even with purity culture, is like, oh, purity culture is bad because, you know, we now think of this or because it's led to this and I have friends who are still single because of that influence and we hear all of these thoughts and we have friends and we hear stories and experiences, so there seems to be a lot of pushback against that, especially those who've grown up in the purity culture and practiced it. And now for Christina and I, who both grew up in this as parents and as parents of teenagers, there's this sense of, okay, well, we need to talk to our kids about sex. We need to talk about sexuality. So what advice can you give parents who to navigate this tension, right? This navigate this tension, like Christina and I, who grew up in this purity culture, but wanting to give a biblical ethic around sexuality for our children, but maybe not in the exact same way. What advice would you give us?
Yes. One of the biggest things about that, you know, teaching your children something is being able to deal with your own, your own wounds from that first, right? Or yeah. At least be working on that at the same time. Because I think we know, right? Kids pick up when you're trying to teach them something that you don't fully really believe yourself, right? Or it's like, you're not quite there yet, but I'm going to tell you this because I think it's true. I'm just still figuring it out, right? So one of those things is really, and I think, so of course there is when there's specific trauma, right? That is a big thing that needs to be worked through in healthy ways for healing in that area. With Christians though, I think, as I already mentioned, one of those biggest things is really, you know, where does spirituality and my sexuality, what do I believe about that? And how does that fit into my life? For us as parents, I think understanding that for ourselves is a big, a big first step in that. The second thing then I would say is, the educating of yourself, right? So there's the healing part and working through that. And then there is simply like, what do I wish I had? What do I wish that I was taught when I was six, when I was, you know, starting puberty, when I was, you know, as a teenager, like looking at dating relationships, what do I wish? And as I got married, right? As I went into marriage, what do I wish was taught to me that I later on was like, wait a minute, no one told me about this. And so what I think is really wonderful about, you know, how children develop is that we have these specific stages, right, that do give guidelines if we're looking at it. So in reality, sexuality starts with just our body, right? Like kids, all they know is their body. And so, being able to have those little conversations, the the kind of awkward, out of place questions that young children especially will ask, you know, trying to not react, you know, trying to accept that and have those like little conversations as they come up, right? If it's not the right time or place for the conversation, you know, trying to let them know that I would like to talk about this with you. Maybe we can do that when we get home, right? Or, you know, however it's taught, that is, you know, that is our first impressions really of, I'm not supposed to talk about that, right? When we have those responses of things that kind of innocently we bring up as children. And sometimes, like, I think even like you said, Christina, sometimes it's not anything that's said, right? It's what is avoided, right? It's not talked about, or maybe it's a look on the face, right? When we say something or do something and then we start to believe certain things. So, you know, at a young age, there's our body, right? Just talking about how God made our body and trying to be open to those questions so that as kids get older and the questions get harder, they know there's this habit, right? Like there's not even a question like, oh, I'll just ask mom or I'll ask dad about this. So that relationship, you know, that's built up already.
I love that because when we think about parenting, right? I mean, oftentimes it's, we would never want to say, hey, do what I say, not what I do. Right. There's a hypocrisy to that. And as kids get older, they obviously see that. So being able to navigate first and foremost your views on this and coming to terms with how maybe purity culture has affected you as a parent directly or indirectly is huge. So when a parent then sits down and they're like, yeah, you know what, let's talk about this because yes, sex ed is happening in schools, but let me teach you about sexuality from a biblical perspective. Mm-hmm. And where would you encourage them to start? So they've had the personal, they've had the direct, you know, okay, I've dealt with this, but where do I start with my kids?
This first suggestion, it'll be different with different, you know, different parents or relationship with kids. But, you know, humility and vulnerability, I think, go a long way in this. If you are able to share even a little bit of, you know, this was my experience and, you know, this wasn't handled very well when I was growing up. And I want to, you know, I want to learn how to do this better, right? Or you know, I want to be able to explain that or walk through this with you. You know, having some kind of, anyway, I think that can go a long way. And then for, if it's a biblical kind of view that you're looking for, a kind of place to start, I think looking at, so purity, in the Old Testament, right, was all about being able to have the presence of God with you, right? That was the purpose. And so looking at the kind of those basic theological things, walking through that with teenagers, that is one of the big things that was missing in purity culture, right? There wasn't the other theological teaching. It was a lot of just don't have sex and that's what was emphasized the most. But teaching about, so the temples, right? So the different ways that God was working to be with people and the ways that, you know, purity was a part of the way that they could be near God. And then, you know, continuing, right? How that made Jesus coming so much more impactful. You know, it's even a conversation that can shed a new light for kids that have grown up as Christians on really a deeper meaning of what it meant that Jesus came, especially for Jewish people, that God's presence was in a body, right? It wasn't just in a temple. It wasn't separate, you know, and God's presence was walking up to people, who were sinful and who, you know, they were not following the purity culture standards, the people that Jesus chose to walk up to in love. Hmm. And so being able to talk about what Jesus has done and you know, what purity means in that, the presence mm-hmm. of God, and really being able to emphasize how their relationship with God is settled in Christ, mm-hmm. and that what they struggle through or work through, these questions they have in their sexuality as they do that, it's not going to undo anything that Christ has done, right? So I think the theological side of that is a big big thing to teach. And then being able to look at in my research, I studied more along women's impact, right? How women were impacted. Mm-hmm. And so this may be a little bit different if you're talking to a teenage boy, but I think this is still, it's still really good information in this. In scripture, the way that women, that there's like a theological kind of trail with women of going from Eve and just the ways that, and Mary, right? So these women that were God chose in God's presence, that carried God's presence, and how, so when you really get into the specifics of sex, right? Obviously, Song of Solomon, that book, mm-hmm. right? It has a lot of levels, right, of meaning. So mm-hmm. that, I mean, for anyone, a parent who wants to go through like a really, you know, deeper study of here's where the Bible really talks about what sex can be and where it shows that it is a joyful thing mm-hmm. and that it's actually a picture of Christ and the church, right? Kind of showing, and I mean, you can do that in the most basic way of just the connection, mm-hmm. showing sex was meant to give a picture of this. It was meant to be a spiritual metaphor. You know, it, that just making that connection, or obviously you can go deeper into the teachings of that. Mm-hmm. And so that would be like biblical in a practical way with resources.
The wait is over. Find out what happens in the thrilling conclusion of the 12th Dead Sea Squirrels book, Babylon Breakout. Hi, I'm Mike Naraki, co-creator of VeggieTales, voice of Larry the Cucumber, and author of The Dead Sea Squirrels. Get ready for more daring rescues and hilarious jokes as Merle and Pearl and their animal friends embark on a ridiculous mission to bust the kidnapped Gomez family out of Babylon, a Bible-themed amusement park with talking animals. Young readers will love the nutty misadventures of 10-year-old Michael and his friends and will learn all about biblical life lessons such as forgiveness and friendship. Read all 12 Dead Sea Squirrels books, available wherever books are sold.
As we start to wrap up, Nadine, you're talking about the shame factor of like healing your own shame and helping your children not feel that shame. So I'm just thinking about maybe some of our podcast family who they found out their child is sexually active and they're right now feeling like, well, maybe I didn't do enough. Maybe I didn't talk to them enough, or maybe I didn't talk to them at all, and just feeling really like shame about that. And then how do they, so what would you want to say to them? And also the second part of that question is, how can they show the grace of God to their children, but not necessarily like condoning what they're doing, right? Because maybe they would rather their children not. I know it's every person's choice, but perhaps of like, hey, there may be a different way that you can approach your sexuality. So what would you say to that?
The first thing I would say is to just a reassurance of, you know, no matter what how we raise our kids or the parenting we do, what we do or do not do, you know, our children are individuals, right? And it can be too easy to get caught up in, oh, maybe I did something wrong. But in reality, there is so many right influences, right? And our children, they do make their own choices as a part of that. What I will say, but I think the encouragement in how to approach this is, you know, those are the moments when kind of a critical moment, right? Where the child, your teen, right? If they're going through something like that, they're probably very scared of how you will respond, right? Or if they will be rejected in that. And being able to look at this with, you know, trying to separate, like you said, right? Okay, this isn't ideally how we would want our son or daughter to, you know, make these decisions. But how can we still show them that love and care, while we still have some honest conversations about, you know, why we'd hope that it's different. And I think one of the biggest, gifts we can give our children is, especially as they're teenagers, is to to tell them, you know, you are your own person. So you do make your own decisions. But this is what we want to offer you, right? This is why we believe that this is a more beneficial way to decide. And this is why we'd be concerned for you, right? We'd be worried about these things. And trying to frame it less in a that's wrong, you know, but more of a the description of like, this is why we're concerned, because we love you so much. And just giving that also, I think, the support that they feel safe talking to you, right? For them to you know, to be able to say something at the beginning, like, you know, we love you, like, no matter what, and we just really want to help you through this. We want to be able to, you know, learn through this with you. And so just so that they feel safe, right? That they feel secure in sharing. Maybe they did that and regretted it, and they agree that it was a bad decision, right? But they're not going to say that, right, to parents that are just wagging their finger and they feel like they're not supported by, right? So being able to really surround your child, trying to reinforce your love for them and that you're supporting them, but also here's where we're coming from in the love for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that approach, because we all make mistakes, right? And whether it's in hurting a friend or hurting ourselves or misunderstanding someone or projecting our biases onto our kids. I mean, being able to come to our kids with empathy, with understanding, with the grace of Jesus, and just coming to this place where, hey, I'm not an expert either, right? I mean, yes, when your kids are young, they think you're Superman, Superwoman, but the older they get, and by the time you're having these conversations, they know that you're not that way. And being able to come with humility to talk about sexuality, to talk about what they are going through and the thoughts and all that are going to be just so important. Nadine, you've given us so many things to wrestle with, so many things to think through, both for all the parents listening and for future conversations. So we just so appreciate you, your time, and just the way that we are able to connect like this.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
With that. So if our podcast family would like to learn more about you, or even like, hey, realizing that you do take clients and maybe want to explore more about the shame that they feel in their own bodies, how can they find out more about you and how they can reach out to you?
Yeah, easiest is nadinecrane.com. So that's my website, has my info and then how to contact me. If they're on Instagram, at NCrane Counseling is I'm on Instagram most of all in social media. So
awesome.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you, Nadine.
Thank you.
Y'all, I'm so thankful for Nadine and for what she shared with us today. Mm-hmm. It's such an important topic that isn't talked about enough because it can bring so much shame along with it. You know, I recall a friend who does premarital counseling share that the biggest trend she has noticed is that couples who grew up in purity culture feel really disappointed with their intimacy lives or having issues being intimate. It's no wonder this is the case if you've been raised to be completely disconnected from your body or being taught that your body is dangerous. If you are in this position, please know that there is hope and there is help.
So in our show notes, we've included a link to help you find a Christian therapist in your area if this is something you'd like to explore. If you're in Canada, you can reach out to Nadine and she'd be honored to walk you through the journey of learning to be with your body again. For all the information and links to this episode, please go to inbetween.org/episode176. And if you know this episode would be helpful to a friend or family member, would you please take a moment to share? You can text them the link, inbetween.org/episode176, or click the share button on your favorite podcasting app.
So podcast family, with our year ending soon, this episode is the last one for the 2023 season. We really cannot thank you enough for tuning in, engaging with us on social media, and emailing us when you have questions. We are truly grateful for the podcast family that we have and are blessed to be journeying alongside y'all as we live, learn, laugh, and grow. We will be back in 2024 with more phenomenal episodes and interviews to help you build a marriage and family that you love. Be blessed.
And Happy New Year.